saying that the same b'libenu l'havanu l'haska, we say that in the kula, it's not the same thing as v'lo suachar l'vapa. In one case, the word wave means instinct, that's v'lo suachar l'vapa, means instinctive. And in the other case, when we say avodah shebelev, we do not mean a worship of the instincts, through the instincts. And the worship of the wave means an internal avodah. For instance, Talmud Torah is an avodah shebelev. Okay? So that doesn't mean the same with being love and lust, it doesn't mean give my instinctual part. So the word lave sometimes means the das, sometimes it means knowledge, sometimes it means the emotions, the instinctual component of mind. Okay, the same thing is losuch alvachahare enecham. Okay, so enecham over there means lust. Okay? You shouldn't follow the lustiness of your eyes. Okay, if your eyes want to see something, there's a lust. Alright? But on the other hand, you have it says Chacham Einav Barosha, and he's a wise man who sees in advance. And over there, the idea of sight has to do with knowledge. Or Einecham Horoos, Eishes are also akin to Vav Pa'ar. And your eyes that have seen. So over there, the eyes are talking about the part of man that perceives reality. So sometimes the word Einayim, sometimes Einayim could mean lust. Sometimes Einayim could mean knowledge. So you see that you have to see the context of the term, because the Torah is not a scientific language, it's ordinary poem, as we said. And therefore, you always have to realize that you cannot use a term lave and then go from there to extrapolate on from that term, because you have to know what the term is exactly. Okay, so now getting back to your question. Now, yes, go.
Well, why is Torah so hard for keeping that complete opposite of Torah?
Because of the fact that that is the way people speak. That's common promise. People speak that way. When people could refer to the eyes as insight, because your knowledge comes through, most of the human knowledge comes through the eyes, through the sense of their sight. Or people could refer to the eyes as sometimes if a person sees something which draws him in terms of lust and vulgarity. I mean, that's the way people speak. But people don't speak scientifically. Okay, that's why science always has to make up its own language. But the Torah speaks in ordinary language.
So in science terms, it's a little different.
Scientifically, you have to differentiate between if you're talking about the eyes insofar as they give you knowledge. And you have to have one kind of a reference. We're talking about the eyes insofar as they seem to be a vehicle of the appetite of man, and then the predator part of man, then that'd be another.
Which is the average guy is number one to differentiate very much.
Yeah, some average guys, the average person doesn't use precise terms, uses the same exact term and relies on the context to make his meaning clear. You see, when it comes scientific, it's not enough. You gotta then you want precision, and the term itself has to be precise. Otherwise, if you have a scientific notation and you're not going to be clear, you're gonna rely on context, it could lead to error, and also your notations are gonna have to be very lengthy. So therefore, as a matter of precision, you have to develop a new term that means specifically what you're talking about. But in common parlance, people don't do that. People don't really rely on the context to make things clear. And the Torah simply follows the ordinary language, otherwise an ordinary person wouldn't be able to read the Torah itself. Yes, the Torah is because the Torah is not. Yeah, that means the scientific aspect of Torah itself only comes about through the Torah itself. But before you get Torah itself, that's why you have the Yigun Yiddish alternative at this point, which is a scientific system that you apply to the Torah itself. And then you can, if you program that system in, then you can come up with
But why wouldn't the Torah want to encourage us to speak, how do you say, scientifically?
Because nobody would be able to read it. Not a person might be able to read it. It's very nice, but in other words, that would be like saying that, why don't we speak like physicists talk?
Why don't we?
Because the average, it is more precise.
Or try to speak more, whatever. So the Torah is not supposed to say it.
Because the point is, if you would be in a room of physicists, you wouldn't understand what they're talking about. Because the precision has brought them into a new area of language. But your language is not because of the phenomenon in the world that they live in, the precise world, so you wouldn't understand exactly what they're saying. Okay? The average person doesn't need such precision in their daily life. That's why the average person is not going to talk that way. Therefore, if you're talking to the average person, you have to speak in his language. The Torah wants to reach everyone. The purpose of Torah Shabbat Shav is that everyone should be able to read and understand at least the basic idea of the Torah. That's why it had to be written. If it was written in a precise way, then it would be, and nobody would be able to read it except people that are on a higher level of profession. And that wasn't God's intent.
So we're trying to establish that we should just establish that Torah is the removal of fantasy from our children and culture. So,
okay.
So the question was, how do we optimize the experience of Tila as toward that goal?
How do you optimize the experience of Tila towards the goal of what?
Development.
Personal development. Okay. So, I mean, you know the three components of Tefillah. We'll discuss it with you. You know, the three components of Amar Lefin Hashem and Slasua Pasoda and really, Tefillah is composed of here you find the Torah Shabbat Peh takes the Torah Shabbat Chassam and transforms it into a scientific system of exactly two. And for instance, it says by Avram was Mispala, praise to God, right? So it says, by Avram it says, Vayakom Avram Babaker, the next morning he got up, Ela Mokom Asher Omad Shamus Kenorazim, the same place where it's Omad Lefin Hashem, which previously explains he was Mispala Pesidon, okay. And then you have another passage that talks about Yitzchak. It says, Vayetze Yitzchak Asuach Basadu Lefnos Orev, he went out to speak in the field. So what does he mean to speak in the field? So Chazal said means he was mispalat. And he went out to the minute of time, he was out in the minute of the afternoon. So Lasuach Basar. So they see Tila is used in the language of Sichol, which means conversation. Okay. And then you have another case where it says by Yaakov Avinu, by Yivga Bamakom by Yolanshan. So by Yivga Bamakom means he happened on the place, but also by Yivga Bamakom could mean that he also talked about Pesach, it's put together in that way by Yitzchak Makom, because it also means, double entendre, it also means he prayed to God. Makom means God, now Yitzchak means, because the word by Yitzchak is used for Tila. Okay? So the word by Yitzchak means really, the word by Yitzchak in general means to annoy somebody or to do something antagonistic, like in Tanakh, it's gap gaba, and he's going to the spirit of the pillar. Okay. So pega, called pega means like a play. Okay, so the strings of that word should be used for Tila as well. But we'll explain about it. Really, the Chazal quote these three by Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. You see, each one is a different concept in Tila.
Right.
Okay. The first one is Omed Lefnei Hashem. That's the most basic, most important concept. That means that the person, or the Rama says, the person should remove himself completely from any kind of associations that he has to this world, and should consider himself as if he's standing in the heavens before God, completely removed from any kind of emotional ties. Okay. That's why the Gemara says, "Aksinim Rishonim," would spend an hour in preparation. Okay. Of course, in that hour, they delve into many things that sit there, and they're not the they delve into many metaphysical ideas concerning God. It's knowledge of God is always endless, isn't it? So, and it's infinite in terms of man, and it's not even possible in a final way. The human mind is impossible for human being to really know God, but you can't know of God. So Omer Lefnei Hashem is a person. That's the most. Okay. So the first thing is that the person must really be in a situation removed from everything and recognizing that he's in God's presence. That alone puts a person in a certain state of mind of perfection, because it's a different kind of a realization. Realize he's a creation, okay, and God is the source of all existence, the creator. And it's a certain realm of reality that that was completely different from the realm of reality, which is with the person's constantly involved with, which is the realm of man, basically, which is the social realm. So it's a complete removal from the social realm and the social value system, and it's a recognition of standing before the creator of the universe. That's a different kind of a experience.
How do we go about doing that, though? How do we crash off Netflix?
We have to, the person has to remove, has to concentrate, and he has to remove, he has to make an effort to remove his thoughts from any kind of social connections, and to realize, and to envision the fact that he's really just standing before the creator of the universe.
That's impossible, you know, for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It's impossible.
Impossible to do.
Yeah.
Well, you're in a room
for a lot of
people.
You have to be on a distraction every second. The person's watching you, right? You're the wall.
Then you have to get out of the room, go somewhere else.
Then what about dominating
the community? No, Seabor's, there shouldn't be a distraction. People are governing, it's not a distraction. That shouldn't be a distraction. And I'm not saying that in individual cases it may not be so. Every person is different.
Well, I just want to make the generalization that everyone does get distracted. And, if you want to have ultimate not caring of a social environment, that for a person of the 20th century, first of all, that's very, very thankful and very large.
Yeah. Well, one of the essential things is listening very lot, and you're saying that's impossible to do it in a room full of people?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, first of all, take the... this doesn't work. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. What's this on?
So, first of all, we have to understand that that's a mistake of this society. This society is an all or nothing society. In other words, either you're a big success and a famous person and very wealthy, or else you might as well just be pauper and nothing and nobody. And it's extremes. Either a person drinks to the point of a stupor, or else the person simply doesn't go near any alcohol. And that's what the American society. It's extremes. You know? Either a person runs 26 miles till they almost drop dead, or else they don't do any exercising. This society is a society of extremes. There's no happy medium in our society. The society is a sick, neurotic society, and that's one of the signs of the sickness. The sickness is extremes. Normalcy is the meat, the Ram talks about, the golden meat, the Shvilazar, the golden root. So that is a sign of the normal mind. But the abnormal mind is always running to extreme. And especially when you're young, extremes sound very exciting. And that's why you find people, young people, unfortunately, you read about every day where they live their lives as well. Because they go to extremes, and they indulge in drugs or some other crazy things, and they simply lose their lives because the desire for an extreme kind of a thrill or whatever it might be. So the normal life is not good enough. So that is that you have to recognize and identify as a sickness of this society, and you're raised in it, and you're influenced by that, by every movie you see, every article you read, wherever you go, this idea is prevalent in some form or other, either hidden or overt. You know what I mean? But if you really, once you really start understanding, you'll see it's all over, because you read an article about a person that's successful. And you'll see what they're portraying is the extremes of success. See? Or like the show, The Lifestyle of the Rich and Famous. See? Extremes. People love to see. It's whatever it is, you're not going to read an article about an ordinary person. There must be something else to do. It's like somebody one time told me, there was a person that was in the media, actually. And they said to me, they said that they admire certain individuals. They told me about the individuals. They said, well, it was a person that wasn't really that healthy. And then they started to work on their health, and then they started to get involved in running, and they went so far as to win a marathon and to get a medal, an Olympic medal in a marathon. Now, that's a really great person. They overcame their weakness, and they were successful, and this, you know. So this is somebody they admire. So I said to that person, I said, that's not somebody I would admire, because here you see a person that's not in reality. Because, first of all, why did they do that? Why have to run a marathon in order to get a medal? That's an ego trip. In other words, they really did it for a certain kind of ego satisfaction. And you see that was really the goal all along. If you just want to be healthy, you don't have to compete. You just run yourself. So obviously this person is driven by a desire for success and fame and ego, That's what drove them, and that's why they ran the 26 miles, you see. And 26 miles running is not necessarily healthy for you. Your body's not meant to just keep running endlessly. The first person that marathon was made after actually dropped dead when they ran 26 miles. So this became a sign of health for somebody. But there again, you see, in our society, the extremes are what are really looked up to is that's the life, the extreme life. So I said, to me, a person who runs maybe 2 miles a day or 3 miles a day and does it for their health is the person that I admire. Not the one that won the medal, because that's the person that's doing something that makes sense. They're doing it because it's good for their health, and that's why they do it. They're not looking for any kind of recognition for it. A person that's driven by recognition is really driven by a base motive. They're not driven by the motive of health. It's some kind of a... They must have this recognition for some reason. But that's basically... This is the person that's admired. The individual in front of a person, a famous person in the media. So, lives this kind of lifestyle. So this is the value system, okay? And it's something which, the media, you see, the media thinks this way, and because the media thinks this way, the media gets down, trickles down to everybody, everyone. Like I said, I don't think there is a thing you could pick up almost that is devoid of this kind of effect. There's always some kind of an extreme thing that people are directed. So in Yadis we say no. Yadis says, not extreme. A person should live a life in the shkilazah, okay? What is a mezuzah? Mezuzah on the garden of a person. He looks at the mezuzah and thinks to himself, the ideas in the mezuzah. Shema Yisrael Hashem comes from the heart. He thinks about the idea of God, the creator of the universe. And he thinks about Achdus Hashem, that the oneness is something that you can't even conceive. Okay? And he thinks about V'ahavta Avas Hashem, that that's really the most important thing. And that's really the essence of life. There's Avas Hashem, and understanding God's Chachma, and Limud HaTorah, and these things are different, and then he goes to work. Okay? Goes to work, he gets lost in a social situation, right? Comes home at night time, he sees the mezuzah again. Same ideas go through his mind. Is it a perfect existence? No, for the perfect existence, he wouldn't need the mezuzah. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't need a mezuzah, right? But Yehudah says that you can't live a perfect existence. In the daytime, you're going to get lost. But there should be a time when you're in reality. Okay. Tefillah, you can't stand tefillah, you can't daven 9 hours a day. Okay? The Hasidim Roshonim died was an hour before, an hour after, that was metaphysical speculation. That was doing. But a person can't daven as a daven a certain amount of time. Daven Shachar is not a mire. It's not an unreasonable amount of time. It's not an exceptionally long time. It's not an amount of time that's nothing either. Okay? It's within reason. Okay? That's the whole system that does it is within reason. So it means that 3 times a day a person should have a certain kind of a reality, reality experience. Okay? Reality. You can't do it all day long because then the person is not going to be able to be productive. See, you have to work on a person slowly. That's the purpose of mixtus. The reason also is hiding from this person. A person sees the tits and reminds himself of the blue, reminds him of the ocean, reminds him of the sky. The infinite, the things like that, above it doesn't happen every second. Wearing tzitzis once in a while, what's it mean? So the point is, the Torah is a system of moderation. So when you stand before God, you're supposed to try to remove yourself from all your social, emotional ties. Does this mean all of them? All, absolutely all? For most Rabbeinu, yes. But for us, no. So how much do you have to remove yourself? Each person according to his level. I mean, that's something which it's not an all or nothing. See? That's the problem. The problem is we tend to think in our society in terms of all or nothing. Either I can remove myself totally and I'm flying in the sky, or else the whole thing's not worth it. Because there's no it's not attractive if this is no extreme. See? So that you have this is against. You have to say each person on his own level. One level of person. The person is the greater the person is, the more obviously he can remove himself from his emotional ties. The more he understands himself, the more he recognizes his weakness in terms of his dependence on the social, rather than depending on God. I mean, that's the Kahan, okay? So each person is according to his level, according to their level. Each person according to their own level. So, So his or her own will. And the thing is that the it depends on the individual. It can't be done in the street. Now, that is the first question. It depends on your question also. How could a person do it? If a person strives to do it, they could do it to some degree. Can't do it completely. Some degree. That's enough. That's a degree of the capable. That's all it's the Chazal say, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bo Betrumyin Biyos. God doesn't come against his creatures, fighting. You should be doing this, you should be doing that. God is a Rahman. I mean, each person according to their level. God understands the person's level, and everyone is not expected to go beyond what they can at the time. And that's it. That's the answer question. Second question you asked was, what about davening with a tzibur? Is it distracting? Well, so davening with a tzibur is a very important thing. Because there the concept is that a person's tefillah cannot become egocentric. There's always a danger in tefillah that it becomes an egocentric thing. So a person will go alone in the room and just himself, he's with God, there's a tremendous danger that the person is going to think it's just him and God, and like he, he's like some kind of a tremendous tzaddik, it could be an instrument of being involved in the self to a tremendous, tremendous degree, so that's a danger. That's closeness via egocentricity. So that's why we have the concept of tefillah b'tzibur. B'tzibur means a person has to recognize that when he's davening, he's not the only one that exists. There are other people that exist just as well as he does, maybe even better, maybe in a higher level. And the person must be concerned not just about himself, but about Klal Yisrael. I mean, that's the person's concern is simply egocentric about themselves. Then they're getting caught in the same thing this society is caught in, which is the self. Okay, the self, the society of the self, and extremes. So therefore, the Torah does it. The Torah tells you when you're done, you should daven with a tzibur. What is the tzibur? Rabbi Soloveitchik one time gave a beautiful shiur on that. He says the tzibur of ten is really a reflection of all of Klal Yisrael. It's like a minute entity that reflects the whole Klal. Because when you daven, you're really supposed to be davening for all of Klal Yisrael, even for people of the world, even not just for Klal Yisrael, the entire world actually. Okay. So, Remakav 70 Kabonis, in the sickest time, in the whole world. First, the Klal Yisrael's first responsibility, and then to anyone that's an Adam, that's a good person. So, So, therefore, the idea of tefillah is a danger in tefillah that it's going to get lost, male get lost in egocentricity. So, therefore, you must have a tefillah. Does the tefillah distract to some extent? Yes, you probably are right that insofar as there are other people there, it does serve to makes it more difficult to remove yourself from the social ties because you're in a social situation. But you have to weigh, the Torah has to weigh a lot of factors in setting up assessments. Not just one factor. And you're going to have to, do some give and take there. So only God can determine what the proper route to take is. That's what a mitzvah is. So God determined that tefillah has to be tzibur. It's more important not to get involved in ego. The danger of egocentricity is greater. But it may take away a little bit from your ability to remove yourself completely from society, but that's worthwhile because the other option, namely getting lost in yourself, is the greatest danger, is a greater danger, and that would be worse. So therefore, you had to say that tefillah tzibur is extremely important. By the way, I criticized that as well, because he had basically no understanding of it. Criticized Lacha was, the one that the Goyim worship, Yeshua. That was his thing. You should pray privately. You shouldn't pray publicly. It should be a private thing. That went over very big in the world, because the world has no understanding of it. So he thought it was a big critic. And actually, it's totally erroneous. The whole idea of the tzibur is that's egocentricity, which basically was, because that's why he said he was, whatever it was. Right. But he got lost in the egocentricity. And that's why he says, he's the way, he's the this, he's that. It's an egocentric illness. But he would have listened to Tfilah B'Tzibur, he wouldn't have made that mistake. It's important to realize that our halachos are set up, are based upon very deep psychological and philosophical principles, because they're given by God, and they're very precise, and that's why we always say there's such a tremendous danger of tampering. People come in and they tamper with the system. They just understand the surface of it and they start tampering. It's like putting a person in the laboratory with the finest kind of experimentation and just let a person walk in and see the smell of something, they'll make a change. I mean, you destroy it all. That's exactly what happens with Torah. But people in Torah, they don't recognize it. And usually what happens is that they take the values of their society and use it as a tool of tampering, like feminism today, all the general things in society which are based upon people that have no real comprehension of anything, just following another emotion. Today it's this emotion, tomorrow that emotion. And they try to take these things and tamper with the Torah that's built on very deep philosophical psychological principles. Obviously, what happens is there's a catastrophe. So that's why Yahadah says that Tfilah B'Tzibur is very important. Now your question is, why are you allowed to daven alone?
No, so why isn't it usher to daven alone?
Yeah, that's why you're allowed to daven alone. So the answer is you really never daven alone. That's the answer. Because you see, Chazal saying that even if a person is davening alone, they should daven at the same time as the tzibur. They should hook into the tzibur at least to daven at the same time as the tzibur. Because they know they're not just davening alone. And if a person can't do that, if you take a look at the tefillah is always important. Okay? It really is refa'inu, I don't think, not refa'inu. Not that I'm going to say it, but refa'inu. It's to be us, right? Baruch Alinu is not us, right? Kabbash Avadam L'chayim Seinu, and the tefillahs themselves reflect the cloud. When a person wants to pray to God, a person is concerned about the self. That's why a person prays. It's okay, good to be concerned about yourself. And it's not the moment of the self. It's supposed to be concerned about yourself. But the concern about the self should lead you into a whole area of thought and knowledge, and then you wind up with much more than the self when you emerge. The Torah uses the self as a vehicle, but it's just the beginning of the road. But a person may be upset and walk into a beautiful park. They're walking to the park, they're upset, they're running away from something. But as they, when they get into the park, they see beautiful trees and flowers and things, and they become entranced by what they see in the park. They forget what happened before, and they're in a different world. That's what Tfilah was. A person initially prays because they're unhappy about something, they want something for themselves. But once they start praying and they get into the ideas of Tfilah, they find they're in a different world, and they emerge from that world a different person. And so the tefillahs really, if you look at the tefillahs, they're mainly for the cloud. Mainly for the cloud. Kabbash Avadal Lachay is saying, why is he concerned about the cloud? Shiva Shoftanik Varishan Yatsanik Vakhila is for the cloud. Roshmai Mechabach and Tashir is for the cloud. Semach Dov Merah Satsmiach is all for the cloud. So, and even the things that are for yourself is in plural. It's always to the tzibur. The tzibur is always there. You never stop yourself alone. So that's why you have the highest form is actually being with the tzibur, but then at least aligning your time with the tzibur. Or if you're alone, the tzibur themselves reflect the tzibur, and you realize that it's not complete without the tzibur. So that's why you're allowed to daven by yourself. But really, you never daven by yourself. Why is not reality? Because what he's doing is he's really not going after a realistic goal. What he's going after is something that has no value. In other words, he's just going after ego recognition, which is really just an illusion and a fantasy. There's no real basis for it. He's not really doing something for the right reason. In other words, he's not taking care of his health for the health's sake. He's doing something so he can get recognition from people. So that's not for the real reason. So the reason is focused.
But he exists just as much as Tom Buckham exists.
Not really. Because he doesn't exist in the same way. See, in other words, the like you could say an animal exists as much as a Tom Buckham exists, but that's not really true. because insofar as a person is partakes of that which is real, his existence is more real. That's not the idea. In other words, the world of ideas is more real than the physical world. But the world of ideas doesn't change, and you still need to destroy a rock, but the law of gravity is always going to be there. The law of gravity, the world of ideas, is more real because everything is always caused by that world. That's the backdrop of everything. So if you're a scientist, the world of thought is more real than the world of perception. For a plain person, the world of perception is exactly the opposite. Ramba writes that one of his letters. For a plain person, the world of perception is more real than the world of thought. But for a thinker, it's just the opposite. And that was true in time of Rambam, and that's true today as well. That's why if you read books by physicists like Weinberg is my Nobel Prize winner, he says like the world ideas are real. He says they're not real. Then what am I doing? I mean, Einstein Infeld wrote a book on the evolution of physics. He says to the physicist, he says the framework of the physicist. His scaffold, his intellectual scaffold, is more real than the table. Okay, you understand? In other words, to the chacham, the ideas are more real. Now, since the ideas are more real, insofar as a person lives in that world of ideas, his soul is in existence. Because if he doesn't live in that world, then the soul is dead. And that's why the only part that's functioning is the physical part, the animalistic part. So therefore, the soul of man, which is his essence, is not alive, so the guy is hardly alive, basically. So he really doesn't exist. You see? the person that's not the Tomahawk. So the ignoramus exists physically, but in terms of real existence, is not fully existent, because his very essence is not really partaking of existence. You understand what I'm saying? So, therefore, the only one, as a matter of fact, the Rav one time said, he said, if you take a look at the beginning of the Rambam, so the Rambam says, that God is the only thing that's real, that really exists, because he is real existence. So the Rav said, that we have a general principle that everything in Yahadis has a practical value. He says, so what's the practical value of that idea? Nice to know, I mean, you have to know about God, but it's really good. But aside from that, he wanted to say there must be some practical value. So the practical value is to show you that the goal of the whole Torah is that you should exist. Okay, God is the only real existence, but now your existence, insofar as you're not related to God, your existence is lacking. So really, you could say the goal of Torah is to make it exist. But the Talmud Chacham is really the one that really exists, and the Amar is the person that's the Uranus that really doesn't take care of the soul. The essential part of him is non-existent. So it would be like taking an animal, and you'll take out part of the animal's brain. So would you say that the animal exists as much as another animal? Not really, because its functions have been seriously inhibited. So it's lacking in terms of its existence. Same thing is true of men. Yes?
You say that the math are completely not in touch with reality, because on one hand, yes, his intentions are, you know, to satisfy some emotional desire. But on the other hand, reality dictates that he won a medal. And if you want to talk about his intentions, I think we learned it's called Lo Lishma. So like for him, okay, his intentions were not exactly in touch with reality, but even though his that goal of the medal was not a good goal, at least he got himself into a healthy condition, and good for him.
Well, there's not a question that also, because like I said, I don't think that that's a healthy condition. I think we've shown that marathon runners have a compromised immune system because they run too much, and women that run they start menstruating, and the people get people that run a lot over and over a large amount of running, they get more sick than other people, and they get certain iron deficiencies and metabolic changes, because the fact is the human body was not made to run that much, and the reason why the person is doing it is precisely because the human body wasn't made to do it, because he wants to do something extreme. Extreme means something which is not in line with nature. So therefore, intrinsically, the person is not doing something for their health. Yet, people who are devoid of knowledge, you see, who worship extremes, will say that that's healthy, because healthy is to be overly extreme. Everything that we know is extreme becomes a reality. Okay? In other words, there's no reality to moderation. So therefore, people confuse extremes with health. But it's just because they're looking because they like extremes. So therefore, they want to say, yeah, that's healthy. If a person can run 5 miles a day, he's healthy. Run 25 miles a day, he's five times as healthy. that's the old adage, if one is good, two is better. But those who know medicine, that's not true. Okay, because the quantitative factor is just as important as the qualitative factor. The person really is. But aside from that, there is a strange contradiction in the whole thing. Because the thing is that the people respect the person because he did something for his health. And that's why they respect him, right? But actually, he didn't do anything for his health. So it comes out that he did it for ego. Okay? So it comes out that which they respect him for is exactly what he didn't do it for. So the whole thing is really a myth. You know what I mean? In other words, he is getting honor for something which he really didn't intend to do. Or this thing, look at this guy, look what he did for his health. He didn't do it for his health. He did it so that they could say that he did it for his health and give him the recognition. So he really didn't even do it for the reason that they're saying they're admiring him. So the whole thing is basically a lie. It's a fraud. So it's not even true. Okay, so there's three components. So the first component is the recognition of God's presence, so to speak. Or actually, it's just man's presence before God, and God's existence. That being before God, being God's presence, gives a person a certain kind of state of reality. Okay, that's one. Yahad, this is very big on that. I can't explain that beyond that a little bit, but God values that very much. The question is that state of mind. Right? That's one. Two, second thing is, it says, Vayetzi Yitzchak Lasuach Basar. Lasuach means conversation. So when a person prays to God, it's really a conversation. A real one conversation. So it's a one-way conversation. Okay? But it's a conversation. It means to say the person knows that God is listening to what he's saying, and therefore he organizes his thoughts and his words and his philos. The word phileo comes from phileo, means to judge, to think. And the word prayer comes from faith. We don't have anything with prayer. Prayer is a primitive idea. Because the primitive people would beg their gods to do what they want. Okay, that's what word prayer comes from. But our word, philos, means something completely different. I mean, it means, phileo means to judge. And not some phileo. So, Vaivena Pulim means judge. It means a person has to judge their life and think about their life and set up a system of priorities in their life and present to God their what they feel they deserve and they need in order to their own estimation, their own evaluation of their life. So really that's conversation. Okay? So their tefillah perfects a person because he knows he's before God and he can't speak nonsensically and he thinks into his life and what the person does is by thinking into his or her life they organize their thoughts properly and their priorities, and many times a person may want to be misfollowed for something. You're allowed to be misfollowed for anything. That's Allah. You're allowed to be misfollowed for anything. Because the Shema says, kol nigel yibo, whatever a person wants. But there are certain things that the Chazal say it's not good to misfollow for. God doesn't show Chazal say upon himself at us. Certain tefillahs means that God favors. Other tefillahs without a misfollow, but it's not really how a person misfollow, just a person misfollow every day, just to win the lottery. I mean, it's glad to do it. Glad to do it. But is that a high level of existence? Not really. Okay. So the point is, when a person is stands before God, so then it forces them to prioritize their life and to think into what is really valuable, because he's talking to God. It's a different kind of a sikha, you see, and that improves the individual. So it makes them think and evaluate and reflect.
It forces them to order their life.
Yeah. Forces them right to recognize the values, priorities, insofar as the person can. Each person, again, according to their own level of knowledge. A person of greater knowledge will have a different system of priorities than a person of lower knowledge. But the point is that any kind of use of knowledge, if the person is honest and with themselves, will improve their life. And will cause them to seek more knowledge. That's why the first thing he asked for Tula is more knowledge. That's the first priority. Okay? And the Tulas are really organized in that way, a system of priorities, so that the Chazal, what they did for us was, they recognized that most people are not going to be able to do this on their own, and so therefore they organized the Seder Tulas. That's something which was extremely important. And everything there is organized logically, you see, according to reason, and according to based upon philosophy and psychology. Yes?
But it seems like if it's pre-ordered, it would have, it doesn't seem like the effect it would have on me would be equal to the effect it would have on, let's say, Dan. In other words, having it pre-ordered sort of takes it out of, if it's supposed to be Sifa, where on your level you're ordering your life, what if the way the Chachamim pre-ordered it doesn't mean it?
That's a good question. But the answer is that there are certain things that just don't change. For instance, that the first priority is knowledge. That doesn't change. That's not going to change. So Atta Chayim Das has got to be there. Okay? Magen Avraham has got to be there. Let's start with the other. The things in the Tefillah are there, have to be there logically. And so far as your own input, that's a sephalach. And every single tefillah, you're really supposed to put in your own, doesn't have to be everyone, but if the person is interested in an area of knowledge and they're really seeking knowledge, you should be an atachon l'olam da'as. A person should be involved in tshuva. If a person is involved in a specific avera that they did and they're trying to do tshuva, so shirinu sar sefa. So from there, the person is not feeling well, or he has a friend that's not feeling well, they're not showing any rotary. The tefillah really is just headings where you're really supposed to put in your own particular personal thing, and you should really organize it. It should actually be written out in Lashon HaKodesh before, in advance, in the right way. This person should be stumbling with it. This person should be written out, thought out, in advance. And then the person should say the tefillah. Should say the tefillah. It shouldn't just be, this person standing before God. You went before a Malach Bas Adam, you would think of it in the Sefer, so before God you said Rishon. So that's where the creativity comes into the tefillah. That's why, but you can't change the Chazal did for us, and it was the Chazal say it was not just Chachonim, but there were many of them that were involved in organizing this for us, and that's why when you study it, you see the infinite Chachman, the tremendous Chachman, every word is very precise, and things that shouldn't be there are not there, and things that are there in a very thought out, carefully planned way, and the older you get, I mean, it was just very recently that I understood a certain tefillah, a certain bracha shmonesra, you can't get from that, you understood what? Always bothered me. So, the thing is that, a certain lush, but the thing is that the older person becomes, the more knowledge you have, the more you see how precise the tefillah is. It feels very precise. So that's the second benefit of the tefillah. That's sikha. Yes?
So, all these values that we're learning from doing tefillah,
The point of realizing it, and the realization can only take place. You see, a person can only have a realization if they are in the presence of that which you're trying to realize. I mean, if a person wants to have a realization of basketball, then you cannot give them that realization by sitting in a classroom and showing them a ball and a basket. That's not basketball. Right? In order to have a realization of basketball, he has to get out on the field, he has to play basketball. He has to be in the environment which is the reality of the thing. Insofar as he's studying it on a piece of paper, he is not really partaking of the reality of that which he's studying. He is a mental phenomenon. Okay? But now the thing like this, that the realization of what is true and what is false is really based on the realization of God's existence and the fact that you are in His presence. If those ideas are not there, then it's not really, you're not in the framework of realization. So the framework of reality demands that you recognize it's your framework, and that's what it is. That's all about that. If you're just thinking about Tila, that lacks in realization.
But it would seem as though, basketball, you're not always going to say basketball, but still it's your life, and you're always going to say you're living and learning how to live. So we can just learn how to live.
Okay, sometimes it's not a matter of learning how to live, it's learning what life is.
Right.
Yeah, but life is the recognition that the only significant being is God, and your relationship to Him, and the other things that you think are significant are really not. So you have to have that realization of that fact, which is true. If you don't have that realization of that fact, then you're denying an aspect of reality. You can't deny an aspect of reality and be in reality. It's impossible. And this is the ultimate reality.
When
you're
pure, that's the only time
you're
in reality?
Yes.
Sure.
It's something that you're actually in reality.
Then why is Talmud Torah more important?
I'll tell you, that's a good question. Talmud Torah is the activity of the soul in terms of chokh. That's correct. But there are two. That's separate. It's a good question. The combination of Tefillah and Talmud Torah. It's just those two things. They both work together in terms of an individual living in reality. So you must have both of them. You can't just have one. Okay. In other words, in the perception of chokhma, when a person's in the world of chokhma, then they are in the world of reality as well. But it's not in reality insofar as reflection on the self. You see? So a person has to be in reality in two frameworks. One framework is the fact that they're involved in chokhma knowledge. That's the world of reality. In other words, when a scientist is studying science, so he's studying the world of reality as far as the physical universe is concerned. So the study places them in the world of reality. But it's not insofar as the self is concerned. Okay? So that's why you need tefillah and you need Talmud Torah. Two different things. Tefillah is insofar as the self is concerned. And Talmud Torah is insofar as that's the actual existence of reality, is Talmud Torah. But if the person negates the self, they can't possibly, unless they're very substantially involved couldn't stop thinking or not. But that's a person on a very high level. That means a person that thinks about self. They're always in the world of thought. That's the highest level. But I don't think that. I mean, today, no one's on that level. So therefore, insofar as you are concerned with involving the self, you must have to be there, because that's the real recognition of the existence of the self in the real sense. You must have to be. And Talmud Torah is existing in the world of Chachma, okay, which is actually participating in the act of a man, insofar as man's soul can really be involved in reality. But insofar as a person can't do that all the time, and a person is involved in the self, they must have tefillah to put them in the realistic framework of the self. In other words, there's an involvement in the self which is like you see in our society, which is just capricious, you know what I mean, just an indulgence. But there's a realistic recognition of what the self is. And that's what tefillah is. That's when you need both tefillah and Talmud Torah. Yes?
Just insofar as what you were saying before about adding your own lashon into the tefillah.
Right.
I was under the impression that the matzeya that the chacham had set up couldn't be changed.
Yeah, you can't change it, but you can add in. No, you can't change. You can't change Rafa'inu or Hashem v'nei Rafa'i, or, you know, but you can't say you wrote something for Nechor, you know, to just like push Lemelis, you know, so and so.
So if you were adding something with the Slav Farmer, you would add it in before you had said the Brach.
No, you add it right before the end of the Brach. That's what I'm going to do. Before Kimochal is Lechor. It's always before, you know, it's in every Brach you have right before the end of the summary. Sort of like a restatement of the essence, and then you have the Brach. So right before the restatement. It's a special one. Every book is that way, okay? Mm-hmm.
Who are we, human beings, to have a conversation with the creator of the universe?
That's correct. That's correct.
No, why? Who are we?
We really don't deserve to do that. You're right. And who are we? That's correct.
That's right.
And the answer is that logically you're right. Logically it's absurd to say that me,
person really did not have nevuah tell them that God allows man to do this, then his doing it would be absurd. It would be completely crazy. So that's why in Tfilah you always have a mantra. Tfilah is built with a mantra, like a license. That's why before you say Shema Nesrei, you need to proceed with Ashrei, or else you proceed with Shema Yisrael and Berachas Kriya Shema. And even that in the morning is preceded by Baruch Shema. So that's what the Rebbe one time gave a shiur, and he said that the Tfilah always requires a mantra, because to stand before God, you can only do it because He gave you the permit to do so. And if you don't understand it that way, then again you're distorted. Now, if a person does not understand that, if he thinks that this is makes sense to him, then he's wrong, and his fear is worthless. So therefore, in order to misfollow, you have to have that recognition. That really doesn't make any sense. But on the other hand, we are not in a position to say what God should do or should not do, or what he decides is correct and is right. And since He gave us the permission to do so, so therefore we can do so, because the Nevuah we know that God allows us to do that. So once you have that idea, that it's not something which according to your mind should make sense, but it's something because we don't have knowledge of God, and God is in His infinite chesed allows us to do this, so then you have the proper framework. Then you can doubt it. If you don't have that framework, you can't doubt it. Doubting is misconception. That's why any kind of prayers that man made on his own, you see, without Nevuah, are worthless. You know, they just cater to a certain primitive needs, but that's not what Yagos is all about. I mean, Yagos is a very, very sophisticated system of thought. And in Yahadis, before we doubt, we have to recognize that. That's a few more in us for Siskiyana, really worthless, and it doesn't make any sense. Man and individual stuff which is going for the universe and everything like that, but God in His infinite wisdom said that He can do this. So that's the only reason we're doing it. And that we know through the Nevuah. That's why it says, that's also why it says, the ones that were Masak and Tfilah was a Chacham Esrim Me'ez Kenan Lehem Kam and Nevi'im. You had to have the Nevi'im there, because the Navi is really the only one that from whom you could know that tefillah makes sense. You're allowed to be inspired. Well, I did. It should be absurd of us. So therefore, you need to participate naturally in setting forth the tefillah. After we participate, you should know that the Navi is the one that gives you the right to be inspired. That's really, that's why, that once you know all those ideas, then your tefillah is landed in a solid foundation. And it's perfect. If you don't have those ideas, it's not really perfect. The last part of Tfilah is really is a different concept. And that concept is that a person has the right, and this is something which the Hadith teaches us, a person has the right to invent a Tfilah. And to actually demand of God that their life be changed, even to a very great degree. The person has a right to do that. The person is obligated, as a matter of fact, to use their intelligence in terms of their understanding of lives. And if this doesn't happen every day, but if according to their knowledge they see a different plan than the plan that God has for them, they have a right and even a responsibility to present that plan to God, and God can answer the person and actually change the way the life of that person is. That's a strange concept. But that's a terror concept. In other words, like there's a Chazal that says in Sanhedrin that there was a time when the people thought that the Yetzer Hara was too strong. So they were misfollowed to God, and so he goes back to Navi. They said, we know why you gave us the Yetzer Hara, because when the Yetzer Hara is very strong, and a person defeats it, so then they gain knowledge. So really, strong Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah
or something that was good, because since it's strong, it's not hidden, so then you can analyze it, and once you analyze it, you use your mind, you'll be able to defeat it, and then you'll be on a higher level. But they said we can't defeat it, we're too weak. So therefore, they were misfollowed that the Yetzirah should be sort of hidden. So then you're giving up a certain amount of knowledge, and you're never going to reach the perfect state. But they said, you see, you can't really make the perfect state, you're just dying of it. You're being defeated by the Yetzirah. So we'd rather not have a perfect state, but be successful to a certain degree. So he won't be the... So God's initial plan was that man should have the opportunity to be on the highest level, but man saw that they can't do it, so they were misguided to God that they'll give up the advantage of having the Yetzirah so powerful that they'll be able to see it and defeat it. On the other hand, the power is too great, so they were losing the battle. So they said, we'd rather not have the ability of gaining so much knowledge and at least be able to exist. So they presented the spirit before God, and God answered them. So if it weren't for that, they would have been defeated. So you see that a person has to, in their life, evaluate, and sometimes they have to stand before God and present an alternative lifestyle. It may mean giving up something. But that's something that the person has to do. And if it's a logical thing, then God answers. That's what it says. Like I'll say over there that a picture, there's a ballot fell down from the heavens that said MS. So the MS is for so much like that. What does it mean? It means that when man works out something that's logical, God gives his consent. And he signs it. If he signs it, man can write a document, and God will sign it. But if man doesn't write the document, so then man can be defeated. So Tila, really, in this existence, you see, God demands of you, and this is probably like the most difficult thing to accept, it goes against what people think Tila is emotional. But when you understand it, you realize how fantastic it is. Namely, that in this life, that God gives you an opportunity, sets a certain circumstances before you. And sometimes the circumstances, they're always there for your benefit. But sometimes circumstances, you can't, they may be for your benefit, but the value that you have is not worth the fact that you're just not up to it, and you're going to be defeated. So therefore, you have a right to present God with an alternative plan. And if it's logical and it makes sense, then God will make the change. But if you don't do it, nothing's going to happen, and then you can be defeated. So therefore, you see that Tila, in our concept of Tila, is something totally different, an idea that the world never even got near, never even approached that concept. Namely, that God places you on this world to use your mind and your intelligence, and if you see things are not the way you think they should be, you have a right to approach God, and if you do that, he will change. And if you don't do it, you can do the truth. So it's dependent, that's what Chazal say, Moshe Rabbeinu said. When God said to Moshe, Harach mi meni vash mi meni. He said, remove yourself from me and I'll destroy your Kol Yisrael. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, just a second, he said, Ina dover zed tol elabi. I see from what God said, that depends on me. So if I could come up with the proper idea, the proper tula, then I can change things. But if I don't, then class was going to be destroyed. So that was that's what Chazal said. And that is something which man, that's the way God created man, it's part of his bechira, part of his system of existence. So Tula is a real thing. And if you don't make this, it'll be like a person is coming at you to destroy you. You have a gun right over here to defend yourself. So if you don't pick up the gun and shoot the guy, and the guy's coming at you with a submachine gun, you don't stop him, he's going to kill you. So it means to say that just like in a normal realm, a person has to do things to protect their life, like anything else. I mean, if a person doesn't go out and earn a living, they're not going to have any money. And everything in his life is depends upon your doing. Tila is just another, in that sense, Tila is another avenue. It's another avenue. It means to say that a person must make use of that avenue, and if they have a rational plan that they could present to God as an alternative to the plan that God placed them in, and it makes sense, then God will change for them. But it's only if they do it. If they don't initiate the plan, nothing is going to happen. Okay? That was not good. Moshe Rabbeinu saved Klal Yisrael, but it was up to him if he didn't think.
and then come up with an alternative to the destruction of father's soil, then they would have been sure. But the alternative was that he has to offer more knowledge. And he would be a greater leader. And once he's a greater leader, then the people will gain more from him. And therefore, because of that alternative plan, we were all safe. But if he didn't come up with that plan, that would have been it. He wouldn't do it. So the same thing is true in an individual's life as well. That's in the life of a cult. But the same thing is true in a yochid, in an individual's life, the same exact thing. And this tefillah is an opportunity, a tremendous opportunity for a person to act and to really change their life. And if they don't use it, then if they don't use it, then they're rich. And they're super bad. And that's why it says by Yaakov Avinu, it says it pays off for three things. Tefillah, Doron, and Mochama. In other words, he's facing Esav, formidable adversary, but he used every avenue that there is in reality to use. So one was tefillah, his power. That God should change the situation. Okay, we don't know exactly. I mean, the full tefillah, I mean, the tefillah is a part of it, okay, but I mean, to be sure, it's much more, and, you know, his level was much deeper than what we can understand, but that's one thing. The second thing was Doron, to try to appease Esav. And the third thing was, the last thing was Muhammad. If you can't do that, then you have to do battle. So he prepared himself with every means in reality. And tefillah is a vehicle of reality, just like protecting yourself with a sword or with a gun would be a vehicle of saving your life, or just like going out to work is a vehicle of earning a living, and just like anything else you do in life is a means and a vehicle for your own existence. So the same thing is true about tefillah. That's the third, that's what pagam. It means, in a sense, it's almost like antagonistic towards God, in a sense. Because, and you see, Moshe Rabbeinu gave God an ultimatum. That according to his understanding, if God doesn't grant his request, he doesn't want to be in the Sefer Torah, doesn't want to have his name in the Sefer Torah. So he had a right to say to God, but he's giving an ultimatum. It means that God gives a person a choice. He gives him permission to use his intelligence and his thinking and his mind and to tell God what exactly, according to his view, the way the situation should be. And he has a right to do that. That's called Vayif Gavamot. Of course, you have to know a certain level. I mean, a person has to know a certain level of knowledge to do that. Moshe Rabbeinu could do that. Chana, the same thing. Chana did that as well. And the tefillah, and the same thing is true in the time of Ezra Nehemiah, and I mentioned before. So a person can do that, but that is not something a person does every day. It's something which happens on certain occasions, rare occasions, and it's something which a person has to be on a high level to be able to do. It's not a simple thing, but the fact is that does exist, and a person has the right to do that. A person has the right to make such a request that will actually change their mind in terms of their whole existence. Their life will be totally different. So the way they would have lived is completely changed, and their mind frame and their existence has changed. Sometimes it can be a loss. You could be giving up something, but that's what your intelligence dictates, so there has to be a change. So sometimes you have to take a loss, as I mentioned before. And the advantage of the Yetzer Hara was that you could overcome it and see tremendous chachma. But if you're going to get defeated, so you have to change from that kind of a situation. And you have to accept something less. It may be a loss. Maybe it involves a certain loss. But that's not realistic. That's not realistic. So that's the third aspect of it. Okay. Okay.